Welcome back, folks. This is another episode of the Get a Grip on Lighting. On today's show, we have Scott Zimmerman. Man, this guy's talking about the combination of, incandescent and LED light sources. What? Greg? Are you serious?
Yeah, pretty crazy. He was talking about near-infrared. It got sciencey, but interesting stuff, something that not a lot of people or anybody's talking about, but he's mixing and matching.
But before you listen, you got to do this first. You got to go to satco.com. Go to SATCO.com, baby. Are you a lighting distributor? Come on, man. Are you out there? You know it. You're still selling incandescents. You're still selling halogens. I know you are, sucker, because I do too. That's right. I ship tons of old T12 fluorescents and all kinds of halogen bulbs and incandescent bulbs all the time. And yeah, you know, every now and then we almost every time we preface it, hey, would you like to upgrade to LED lighting? And they say no, and then they still order that box of bulbs, Greg, don't they?
That's what distribution's all about, is selling light bulbs that we're in. And SATCO is one of the best. You go on their website, you can actually see it here. Look at all those incandescents. Yes, still.
And CFLs too, man.
It's awesome. Yeah, and halogens. And I know that's where I get a majority of my product from when I need that stuff. And it's still out there. People do need it. And that just goes to show you who SATCO is. Everybody's in the LED game that's in lighting. We get
there. Sure, everybody.
How many people are like SATCO that actually is like, I'm legit lighting company. I'm going to have it all for you. You can count on SATCO to have it all. And approves it with their incandescent offering, halogen offering, compact fluorescent offering, LED, everything you need. Go to SATCO.
And you know what? After you listen to this one, you may be going back to incandescent, son. And of course, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, the National Association of Incandescent Lighting Distributors.
Might have a new
Look,
group.
Man, there's nothing I like. It was funny. Remember we were talking with somebody about how boring is distributions, he said. I thought to myself, man, hey, I love shipping light bulbs. I'll ship all day long, man. Yeah. So go to NAILD.org, the National Association of Incandescent Lighting Distributors. But for right now, listen to yourself a little bit of lead candescent.
Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Scott Zimmerman.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm doing great. I appreciate the time to have a chance to tell you some of the stuff I've been doing for the last couple of years.
Yeah, you have a good bio. Do you want to start it off and tell us what the best place to start is?
Basically, number one, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about what I've been doing. Mm-hmm. It's been kind of a two-year journey to figure out how to get this out to people to understand and have an interest in. Basically, I've been in the industry for about 30 years. I've got 85 issued patents in the area of lighting and displays. And about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I started working in the idea of trying to do something with lighting and health to try and make things better. And so during that time, I basically was looking around at a wide range of things. I really love the discovery part. That's what I do. And I ran into some work by Professor Hamlin up at Harvard Medical. And what Hamlin's been doing is basically looking at how the effect of near-infrared on the human body. And what I was amazed to find out is once I started looking at it, some of the exposure levels that he was doing and creating biological effects were levels that we used to get in a well-lit incandescent room. Most people don't know, but incandescent actually has significant amount of near infrared. In fact, it's the majority of it is near infrared. And so I was sitting there and I was looking at this and I'm saying, hey, wait a minute, how can we be doing, you know, how can you be getting these biological effects? Are we getting biological effects from lighting? And so I started looking at this. Now this is bear in mind, this is not just a one guy thing. It's a $400 million a year business. Mm-hmm. Industry doing near infrared phototherapy. There's over 4,000 published peer-reviewed medical papers in this. So this is pretty hefty stuff. And they've gotten in a lot of detail about
how many papers? How many papers are we talking about here?
About 4,000.
There's 4,000 peer-reviewed papers about the effects of in medical journals like Nature, say, or whatever, about the effects of near infrared light.
Near infrared. Now, bear in mind, maybe I should make clear. I mean, near infrared, you're aware that we have the visible spectrum and then we have the near infrared spectrum, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not trying to talk down. I want to make sure everybody understands.
I think you should talk down a little.
Most people aren't aware of is that natural sunlight is predominantly near infrared. That's the part that's just to the right, longer wavelengths than what we see with our eye. And what happens is that what these guys have been doing is, the researchers have been working on, is this near infrared component runs from reality, it runs from about 650 out to about 1500 nanometers. You know, we provide, as a lighting, we typically provide between 440 nanometers and 640 nanometers with little tails running out where people pretend like they're adding more. But bottom line, that's what we provide. But there's this amazing problem.
With electric light, you mean?
With LED lighting.
With LED lighting, okay.
I mean, most LED light. What's been happening is we've been slowly shrinking the spectrum that we provide to people. When you go out in the sun, you get exposed from 250 nanometer UV all the way through the visible down into the near infrared and infrared, and it runs out to 4,000 nanometers. So basically, we've taken it. What's happened over the last several, 50 or 60 years is we've been slowly shrinking the amount of wavelengths that we are exposing ourselves to. And what struck me is so, and I've been doing this for 30 years. I mean, I didn't understand this, but what I found is that we've been slowly shrinking these things. And then at the same time, there's been all these negative effects starting to come into play. And then when I found Dr. Hamlin's work, and this is, like I say, a large group, there's not just him, there's a number of people working in the area, it became obvious that we had basically thrown away 80% of the spectrum that we typically are exposed to in natural sunlight. And I thought, oh, well, surely somebody ran some tests and said, oh, this is not necessary.
No, I guarantee you they didn't. I guarantee you they didn't.
Well, and that's exactly what happened. So I got into this and I started looking at the technology and looking at what they were doing. And I started looking at modeling. A lot of my background is in optical modeling. And I started modeling some of these effects and trying to generate it. Well, what is the real baseline that we should be using when we think about light exposure or natural sunlight? And what you have to do is you have to not only take into account.
No, you mean like a baseline replica of sunlight?
Yeah. You know, our body over millions of years has basically been adapting under the assumption that is exposed to a single sun doing a certain thing every day. And that spectrum is used by the body. Now, everything in lighting is basically we just assume that the only thing that matters is what goes through your pupil. Well, that represents such a small percentage of the spectrum that is really available to us. And then when I started working with Dr. Hamlin's, it became obvious that we have this huge other part of the spectrum that we basically threw away, and it's having all these biological effects. So I wrote a paper with Dr. Hamlin back in the early part of 2018, and I tried to get it published at LED Magazine, and I tried to get it through education, and both of them wouldn't publish it, wouldn't put anything out there. And so, I basically, it was really frustrating because, here these guys are using near infrared to basically treat everything from, wrinkles to dementia to, wound healing. And in fact, it's really funny. Recently, NASA just awarded a $600,000 grant to Hanley Liu, who's been doing the work in this area, trying to work on treating PTSD people with near infrared. And what they're wanting her to do is basically provide near infrared as a way to increase the long-term memory retention in astronauts. So there's an amazing amount of science that's going on. So what I did is I couldn't get it published in any of the lighting things because it basically said, hey guys, we kind of forgot something. So I went to LRC and I said, hey, why don't we have a little mini conference and you guys get
you
together.
LRC, LRC for the listeners being the Lighting Research Center?
Yeah. Yeah. And, but I couldn't convince them to do it. They weren't interested. And so I thought, you know, what's the real problem here? The real problem here is that nobody's gone to the trouble of quantifying the effect of photons on biological systems. Now, that kind of sounds like a crazy thing to say, but it's really quite true.
Well, you know, what's interesting, you know, what's interesting is I called, I was writing an article on Dark Sky for my, for the distributor magazine that we write. And I called LEDs, death ray diodes or photon death ray diodes. But it's interesting because there's a tactile pressure to light on on both spectrums. Like, in a way, I have a bit of a theory, Scott, and it's not scientific and there's no research papers about it, but here it is. I think light is to humans what fish is to water. And in a way, we're just figuring out that we're in the water right now in 2019.
I like that. I mean, I think that's a, I mean, there was a recent article in LED Professional and Perez from Mount Sinai. I appreciated, I actually made a comment to him, but I appreciated he started to say that people don't understand the visible light is actually a small part of what sunlight is. And the UV and the near infrared actually may be more important than the visible part of the spectrum. And so what I did is that I believe very strongly that you need to quantify things. And so what I did is I started doing optical modeling of the human body. And it was really an amazing process to go through of discovery, because it turns out nobody had ever bothered to really optically model various parts of the body, especially in the near infrared. And in fact, there's only a few places in the world where people have actually measured the optical coefficients like absorption and scatter and all this other stuff. Professor Tuchin over in Russia is one of the best. And anyway, what I started doing this, it was just the most amazing and humbling thing, basically, to be quite honest, is that I started modeling the eye. And when you model the eye, everybody thinks that, oh, it's an imaging element. All the light goes through the pupil. Turns out that in the near infrared, the majority of photons impinging on the retina don't go through the pupil. They actually go through your eyelid and through your sclera, because the eye is simultaneously an imaging optic in the visible and a non-imaging optic in the near infrared. If you can actually see this by walking outside and closing your eyes and putting your head towards the sun, you'll see a nice orange color that comes in. Then that's actually the near infrared window that these guys in the near infrared phototherapy are using. And you can also see it by taking a small child's hand and putting their hand over a cell phone light flashlight. And you'll see this red, nice, beautiful red glow. Well, if you could see in the near infrared, you'd see that this thing was all lit up. It was bright. And so what's happening is that what you start doing the optics of the human body, and that's what I wrote the paper that got published in Melatonin Research with Professor Ritter, is that, you know, all this stuff is going on in the near infrared that nobody ever paid any attention about. So it turns out that in the eye, the gel in your eye actually has a larger transmission window in the near infrared than it does in the visible. You kind of say, why would that be? Well, what it's really doing is it's actually collecting and guaranteeing that we are never exposed to UV or visible photons, which are much higher energy, without a whole bunch of near infrared being. This is what happens in nature. Not only is your eye selectively gathering near or actually preferring to grab a near infrared, their surroundings. I don't know if either one of you done near infrared photography.
No. No. But what I'll say is that some animals actually see a near infrared through their pituitary, the gland here, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
They can see movement, like an occupancy sensor. They can see movement in front of them.
You can actually see near infrared too.
My lizard brain is intact. Don't worry about that.
No, we won't go in there. But there's a two photon effect that you can actually see in the near infrared. It's been known since World War I. So, or World War II. But anyway, bottom line is that if you go and look at near-infrared photography, and it's beautiful stuff, what you'll find is that when we get the when the sun's hitting our surroundings, in the visible portion of the spectrum, UV invisible, it's being strongly absorbed. It's what makes the colors we see. The green of the leaves has like 20% peak transmission or reflectance off the leaves. But in the near infrared, it's more like 90%. So what if you look at these near infrared photography pictures, you'll see that all our surroundings are funneling near infrared, are reflecting near infrared into our bodies. Now, for millions of years, that's basically what the body has done. And so it was an absurd, it almost, you know, it was almost an epiphany when I started doing these models that you say, why in the heck wouldn't the body use the majority of the photons for something? And what you find as you do more and more of these models, you find that there's all these things, these bio-optical effects that are going on. I happen to have a friend that was having a baby. If you look at a mother's womb, It turns out that the amniotic fluid has a peak transmission and minimum scatter at 850 nanometers.
Get out of here, man.
Nope, not kidding.
That's
you.
It, you're getting all weird with me here. You're telling me there's a whole world that I can't see. You know what's interesting, Scott? So you ever look through Greg, you ever do this? Like where I looked into doing this for customers where you scan a building with a near-infrared camera. So I have done this. And you look for gaps in the AC or the heating. So you can see where heat's at loss in the building is, right?
Yeah, and that's typically done at a longer wavelength than this near infrared.
Right, but what I'm saying is that it's a completely different, like you could walk up to a building on a hot summer day and look at it and think, oh, okay, and you walk in and it's cool inside. But when you look at it through one of those cameras, you can see like all sorts of holes in the building. It's a completely different view that exists, actually.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. It's real.
And what I'm saying,
what you're saying is that it affects us, but you don't know how.
No, I'm saying I know pretty well how, and we're starting to understand how. And the problem is that we're kind of playing God here from the standpoint of we've thrown away the near infrared component. What's happened in the last, that's unique about this situation we're in, is that we basically have thrown away any real exposure to the near infrared in our offices, schools, homes, by doing two things. One thing, well, actually three things. But first thing is that we put in visible only lighting. You know, if as I told you, an incandescent is almost all near infrared.
So let me ask you this. From an energy efficiency perspective, if you need that extra non-visible light, maybe an incandescent light is more efficient than you think.
Well, it is, but number one, but it's over efficient. I mean,
what I'm saying is that if an LED light bulb doesn't produce those nanometers and that infrared spectrum that we need, it's actually very inefficient.
Well, and that's exactly what Silas products are. We're basically reintroducing near infrared by adding a near infrared spectrum into the LEDs that gives you a broad, you know, basically mimic.
But how
sunlight.
Do you know that's what's right to do?
How do I know that's
right? Yeah, how do you know the right move?
That's why I would love everybody just to take the time to go look at the models. I mean, let me put it this way. How come the eye has a bigger window in the near infrared? How come the brain, the cerebrospinal fluid around it has a peak transmission in the near infrared? Why does it optically actually funnel the near infrared, just the near infrared, all the way down into the fissures of your brain? Why is it that the fetus is surrounded by a fluid that is optimized for near infrared? And we're now starting to show that there's some issues associated with inflammation proteins that are suppressed by near infrared versus inflammation.
So hit the sauna once a week and go to a nude beach in the summer.
I would agree with you in some ways, except that in nature we are always exposed to an equal or greater amount of near infrared.
Yeah, I believe you. I believe your deficit theory, but I'm not so sure I believe your solution. I believe that you. Okay, so I would say this. You may have identified a problem, I'm not so sure that you have the solution. Greg, like, what, you know what I'm saying? Like, we've heard a lot of, hey, want to buy the letter I? I got the letter I over here for you. Lighting is the most snake oil filled business there is.
I don't disagree with you. And that's why, you know, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I don't sell snake oil from this standpoint. I went in and I spent the time to do the models. And then I actually did it that one step further and started to show that how we could actually look at the effect of those photons. You know, so what I've gotten is I basically have these models, eye, skin, brain, fetus. And those models show me where the photons are going in the body. And then I went and I started working with doing research around how do those photons, what happens to those photons when they get absorbed in the body. And there's a really interesting work done by a professor, Zotro. He was head of CODI, one of the cosmetics. And he did what's called electron spin resonance. And what he did is he took skin samples and he actually measured how many free radicals were generated as a function of wavelength on those skin samples. And so now what I have is I have a model.
That sounds like CODI's trying to put lipstick on a pig, bud.
Oh, come on. Give me a break.
I mean, they make perfume, man. They make perfume. You got to get better than that with me, man. I know they have good perfume. But come on.
No, CODI has done some of the best science out there as far as the problem is.
CODI makes Obsession for Men or whatever.
Or
Aqua Velva. That doesn't get me excited on this show, buddy. I know who CODI is, and they make cheap.
Yeah.
They make really expensive bottles of water with a little bit of herbs or whatever in it. That's what they do.
No, please take the time to go look at the electron spin resonance is the premier standard for determining how free radicals are generated.
Fair enough, but don't tell me CODI's in charge of this, because I'm not interested.
No, actually, they shut down the program. Mm-hmm. It's kind of synonymous with what I've been fighting in the lighting industry. What happened is Zostro, who was the head of head of engineering, did these studies, and he was trying to figure out how to make a better sunscreen. And what happened is when he did the study, he found out a very interesting fact. He found out that there were just as many free radicals generated by visible light as there was by UV. And so you had that comment, I think, in Venya, where you were talking about the sunscreen and all this other stuff. They shut down the program, in my opinion. I'm not going to play.
Most people don't know that skin cancer rates and sunscreen use correlate.
No, what happens is skin cancer rates and skin cancer or squamous cell carcinomas actually correlate. But basal cell carcinomas have been going up irregardless of the amount of sunscreen you use. And what's exactly what they found in the research and why they set it down. What happened is that what we find is that the the UV is responsible for sunburn and it's responsible for squamous. And there's a really good paper out there that says it has almost no effect on basal cell.
At the risk of offending you, I'm going to say this. The Nintendo 64 Sega Genesis of the Wizzle Dog, right, Nut, means that XYZ. The bottom line is, let me ask you one question. Does incandescent light create the spectrum that you're talking about?
Yeah, it is an overkill.
Okay, let me ask you this. So someone could capture the health effects of this using halogen and incandescent lights. Yes, no.
They can capture the health effects. They'll waste a bunch of energy to do it.
Okay, right? But why would it, like, what you're asking for then is very early adopters. When they could say, why would I spend a whole bunch of money on some light bulb that says it works the way this one does? But no one else makes it. When I could just say, get all those health effects by screwing in my old-fashioned 60-watt A19 and my halogen MR16 and buy them from Premier Lighting in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and everybody's doing good, Scott.
Except that they're shutting down the use of incandescents. You know, this is what I'm trying to say.
Well, let's lobby the government, Greg. Lighting distributors are back. Yeah. They're back. We're selling incandescents again.
So why can't LED mimic, or why can't it get to the point that of incandescent? Or you're saying it can, kind of. It just needs to. Well, what does it need to change to make it? What Silas
is doing is generating a hybrid light source. It turns out that why is incandescent bad? Incandescent is bad because in order for it to generate the violet and blues and cyans you want, you have to drive it close to the melting temperature of tungsten. Okay, so it dies quickly, and you get this huge effect. In outside natural sunlight, you have equal amounts of near infrared and visible. In an incandescent bulb, 10 to 1 is the ratio, mostly near infrared. So it's a case of overkill.
Yeah, but you're getting your backup infrared later on when at least you're getting filled up. It's like the tanks are getting filled up at different times.
You're making my argument for me if you'll let me finish.
All right.
I mean, here
this is my show, Scott, and Greg's show.
I know. You're great at it.
Let him go.
I appreciate the time. But what I found was is that you only need to add, instead of having 10 to 1, you want to have more than the 2 to 3 to 1 like we have in nature, where it's mostly near infrared, but not all of it. And what I found is that LEDs are really good at generating visible. Incandescents, little short filaments, I'm talking about small little filaments, are almost 100% efficient or 90% efficient at generating near infrared. So you just basically build a hybrid and you put the two of them together. Now you say, oh, come on, give me a break. But what you don't know is that little filament is a nonlinear resistor. And so what I've been able to do, and the patents are built around this, is that you use the little small filament that's generating the near infrared, and it current controls the LEDs, eliminates the need for a constant current driver, eliminates the need for PWM by linearizing the IV curve of these two pieces put together.
So you're making a LED incandescent.
You got it. That's what I'm doing. Now, you can't do it with
an LED. You're such a prick. That's such a great idea.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I don't know. I don't know if it's going to work. I mean, I have to check out the size.
I'd ask you, and there's actually videos online that you can look at and see. But bottom line is that, you know, because I'm not requiring the incandescent to generate the violets and the blues, it actually has a longer lifetime than the LED, i.e. the century bulb, which has been out and everybody knows about the century bulb. And you only need to generate a little bit of near infrared relative, because the LED, the incandescent, to your point, you were talking, the incandescent is super efficient at generating near infrared, almost 90% efficient at generating the part we'd normally get from the sun. It's actually more efficient generating that than the LED is at generating visible. So you take the two, put them together, and it's very easy to generate 80 to 100 lumens per watt and give yourself the not only the benefit of the near infrared and the characteristics of the LED and the visible, but you end up with a better system, because now the LED or the incandescent is actually making sure that everybody's trying to use all these fancy electronics to deal with LEDs because they have that very nonlinear IV curve, right? Yeah. Oh, give me a break.
No. I'm not saying you. I'm talking about the fancy electronics. I love it.
Yeah, well,
You know what? This business is like the one thing I love. It's like the only way I could have ever become popular in this business is if, like, everybody introduced a whole bunch of chaos at once. And then they needed me to like come in and talk about it, because this is so crazy. Greg, what this guy is saying is that he's making a LED incandescent. Okay? He's got a name. What's that?
Can I keep that name?
I'm going to send you an invoice after the show. Greggy, invoice him. Right?
Write it up.
So, but you know, he's making a LED incandescent, and what he's saying is that we can't, it's like the flicker with the T8s. It's like we solved the T12 flicker problem with T8s, but then we reintroduced it with T8 bypass LED tubes on a whatever type of driver that makes it flicker 60 times a second, his name is. And I should know as the host, but who cares? I know what I'm talking about. I don't know the name, though. So you know, all you listeners out there screaming in your car while you're driving, it's a constant current or non-constant or Nintendo current driver. And But Greg, like, it's interesting that someone would say all you need to do is put a 1 watt or 2 watt little thing here, tungsten filament, in that LED tube, and you have all the benefits of incandescent without any of the downsides of the low efficiency. Are you going to go?
I guess that's one of one of my questions. Is are you putting this in all LED sources? You can put it in a tube. You can put it in a bulb. Put it in a fixture. Everything. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, think about how many people have been using a little fixed resistor with an LED, trying to get it to be a little bit better behaved. You know, current limiting it, protecting it. The filament does an amazing job, and I'm talking about the little small grain of wheat filaments that inherently have almost 50,000 to 100,000 hours of life. And I'm running it at a lower voltage. And what you put it in series with an LED, and what happens is, and put another one on in a bypass mode. And what happens is as you start cranking the voltage, the two incandescents start lighting immediately. You get this nice, beautiful orange glow that everybody loves about incandescents. And depending on the ratio of the resistance of those two filaments, at some point in time, you reach a voltage point as you're ramping up the voltage where the LED kicks on. But it can't just go crazy. Because of the nonlinear resistance of the filament, it basically makes it a linear response. So it basically goes this all the way back, behaves like an incandescent bulb, and you can do this and essentially eliminate a lot of the fancy stuff we did to try and deal with the very nonlinear characteristics of an LED. You get it only works if you believe, as I do, that the near infrared is an important component of our life. But even if you don't, you know, even totally believe that, the bottom line is it makes for a better light source. Because think about that century bulb.
Well, let me ask you something about belief. Okay.
What?
You said believe.
What do you mean believe? Oh, said, what I believe?
Yeah, you know, you said if
I'm trying to be nice.
No, hang on. You said if you believe, right? That's a good question. Yep. Like, if you believe that LEDs are going to last 100,000 hours, then this, right? If you believe that the Earth revolves around the sun, then this, right? Yep. But belief is kind of the wrong word.
I think, Scott,
the better word you should use is if you can acknowledge that humans require a certain level of infrared light in order to exist in a healthy environment indoors, then.
Yeah, I agree
because
with you.
And, I don't believe. And it's not, I don't believe yet. I'm listening to you, right? Yeah. This is the first time I've heard this. Greg, have you ever heard anything like this before?
I have not. It's first
so
time.
I mean, you know, like we've had some pretty serious scientists talking about the health effects of lighting. And the only thing that I've heard is certain, Scott, is that people know how to hurt humans with light.
Mm-hmm.
We know a lot of different ways that you can hurt people. You can shine bright lights in their eyes in casinos and make them gamble more than they want. You can keep them up late at night by staring at their screens. You can screw up wildlife by having too much light at night. This is the first time anyone's ever come on this show. PhD scientists and that if we've had on and tell me that that's what we're missing from LED light.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you're actually hitting, I guess, the fundamental problem I've been fighting. And that's why I spent so much time trying to actually get the research. I actually went out and if you please read the paper with Professor Ritter. Professor Ritter is the world's expert, one of the top world experts on melatonin. He and I did a joint paper that the request of IES, no less, and we tried to get it published through them, and they just had a conniptions, and they finally ended up having to go to a medical journal and get it published there. It basically goes through all the stuff I'm talking to you about, and I put the science in there that so that people can make their own choice. But it is absolutely absurd, given the work that's been done by the near-infrared phototherapy people, to make a statement that near infrared has no effect on your health.
Come on.
It is absolutely false.
So you're saying that that is not a position that can be contended successfully under scientific review?
That is correct. I'm telling you, there are 4,000 peer-reviewed medical journal papers showing that the near-infrared that we got rid of, not only with our lighting, but also by putting the near-infrared blocking films, we live in caves now in this modern era in the near-infrared. And, you know, I give Randy Reed a lot of credit. He kind of agrees with that part of that statement.
Never heard of him.
But he actually, yeah, well, whatever. But I totally agree with you from the standpoint of that there has not been hardly any research to the effect. It's like we threw it away and then never bothered to go back and see what was going on. And so all I'm telling you is to go on, read the papers, look up photobiomodulation. There's a there's a conference going on in Europe in September, where they're going through and starting to talk about all the different effects of near-infrared on the human biological systems. There is tons, you know, there's a lady up at Wisconsin, and Agnes Kessler, and she's basically doing a lot of work associated with showing that near-infrared is causing our blood vessels to dilate, increasing blood flow. In nature, that's done in coincidence and proportional to the amount of UV invisible. What we're doing now is that's no longer a valid assumption. The body assumes that it's exposed to natural sunlight. It uses the near-infrared component to protect it and repair the damage done by the UV invisible. And when it's not there, we basically threw away a basic defense mechanism. Now, none of that. And what I've done is I basically quantified that by doing these models where I show that, hey, the near infrared is here, the blue is here. And when you do that work, you start to see that this is all working together to essentially protect us. And it matters a whole lot what your skin color is, you know? If you're for stuff like us, essentially lighting right now assumes that everybody's about the same. In reality, once you start doing the optical models, you find out that there is a huge difference in the free radical generation that occurs. I'm not going to watch it. I'm being true. I'm not going to play this little game.
How dare you?
Bottom line, bottom line is that we are all very individualistic and I believe very strongly that it is time for the AMA and others to start coming in and working with lighting to figure out what's going on, because we have radically altered the environment that we spent the last million years living in, and it's having a negative effect.
I've got one question that I got to get lighting focused here, but fluorescents weren't any better than LED at this, and a majority of the commercial environment is fluorescent lighting. So why is it new now?
Because for the last 50 to 60. Yeah, no, but what happened when you came home? Did you come home to a fluorescent light? No, you came home to an incandescent light, most likely. Or you had an incandescent bulb on your desk. That is the unique thing about this situation. We have created a perfect storm. We have totally eliminated near-infrared, not only from our workplace, but also from our homes, or we're in the process of doing it. And on top of that, based on the LEED standard, we are putting these near-infrared blocking window glazings and low-E glass on all of our structures. So there is no near-infrared that used to be present during the last 50 or 60 years that you might have been. And even in that particular time, there are tons of people who couldn't stand fluorescent. You know, they felt it was flicker, it was autism, it was all kinds of stuff. But we are uniquely, at this point in time, we now spend 90% of our time inside under an artificial environment. Our displays contain zero near infrared. Our lighting contains zero near infrared. We have put glazings out on the outside of all our windows, preventing any near infrared coming in. We have created modern day caves.
No, I think it's better. I got a better word for you.
What's that?
We've created modern day aquariums.
How about dungeons?
No, we live in aquariums of light, because an aquarium, like rather than a cave, is dark. Let's say you have an aquarium where you're trying to have coral and exotic fish from the ocean. You have all these machines and stuff that try to replicate the ocean environment in that water for that coral and that fish. But it's never as good as the ocean, right? You can never get it right. And light to humans is like water to fish. And so when we're there's studies out there that show, a significant amount of them, that show that kids that are in classrooms that have either windows or solo tubes, no windows, but tubes that bring in natural sunlight, perform better than kids that don't have that. Right?
And I'm telling you,
I'm telling you, it's an aquarium effect.
I agree with you. But I mean, I'm telling you that 80%.
But I'm not sure if I'm not sure. So you're saying that you have created a product that solves all our problems, Scott.
No, come on. No, what I'm telling you is that I have created a product that combines, it's a hybrid system. It's very simple. You take a few LEDs, you take a few incandescents, put them together in the right way. It much more closely mimics the entire solar spectrum and does so still maintaining a reasonable efficiency. What I'm also telling you is that Silas has put in place a lot of IP around the idea of, okay, rather than blocking the light, the near infrared from coming into the building, maybe we should need actually funnel it into the building, as you say, more like your son too. It is absolutely ridiculous that I'm sitting, that the argument, that people can't get the argument. It's not ridiculous. I shouldn't say that. All I'm trying to do is mimic what we got in nature. And what we get in nature is almost entirely near infrared. Now, why do we have any reason to believe that we could throw all that away and there not be a consequence? And the reason we've thrown it away is that you can't really replicate sunlight using LED by itself, because you can't do a broadband near infrared. Number one, it's arsenide based, so you're going to have problems there. Number two, the Stokes shift losses associated with any phosphor based system are horrendous. And number three, most of those phosphors are water soluble, have all kinds of issues and life issues. So all I'm doing is making a very simple solution where you combine the best of LED with the best of incandescent, use the incandescent electrical characteristics to simplify the driver. One of the problems, I've done a lot of work with POEs and low voltage type stuff. One of the problems has always been you had to put so much electronics out in the actual unit that you might as well have just converted AC at the unit. This is a way to actually eliminate any electronics. The only thing that, if you can provide using a very simple Bluetooth controlled DC to DC converter, if you can provide that voltage out to that light source, the only thing that light source needs to be there are LEDs and a couple of filaments. That's it. Simplifies everything, takes away, and what happens? As you adjust the voltage, comes up with this beautiful orange. After you get to a certain point, the LED starts to turn on. It starts to color shift nicely into, mimics exactly what happens in nature, goes up to 6,000. So I basically have a light source that you can adjust the voltage from, and it goes from 600 Kelvin up to 6,000 Kelvin.
And what, do you have screw-in light bulbs, or what do you got?
That's what we're working on. Yeah, screw-in light bulbs, everything that you did.
You send me a prototype, and I'll put it on the table right here. And I'll turn it on. All right.
Okay.
Scott, thanks for coming on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Satco.com. That's SATCO.com, Greg. The incandescent kings.
The kings of all. How about the lighting kings? They've got everything.
Yeah, they're out.
They've got incandescent. Not a lot of people do. They have halogen. They have fluorescent. They have fixtures. They have sockets. They have components. Everything in lighting. And when I say everything, I mean everything.
Satco's like the bus. Everybody needs to ride the bus. You got to get on the Satco bus. If you're a lighting distributor, they are a key vendor in your quiver, if not your number one vendor, because they have everything.
It's so easy. Pick one brand. They got fluorescents. They got they got ballasts. They got fixtures. They got incandescents, halogens. And yeah, everyone's like, oh, what are you guys talking about? Incandescents aren't hot. Well, but son, you know what? Lighting distributors know a thing or two about lighting. And we sell a lot of different kinds of light bulbs every day, Greg.
That's why you're in business, right? You're a lighting specialist, lighting distributor. You need to have options, and Satco is one of the best.
So go to SATCO.com, baby. That's Satco.com for all your lighting needs, man. Those guys got everything. And you know what? They're not short on technology either, Greg. They got lots of great LED products as well.
Oh, for sure. A lot of innovative new products coming out all the time, and you can see that on their website. Great product.
So, and also the National Association of Incandescent Lighting Distributors. Go to NAILD.org, that's nailed.org, for information on joining this association, or call Greg's cell phone at 999-999-999. He'll answer right away.
I sold three cases of halogen par 30s today. How about that?
There you go.
I did.
You know what? Actually, you know what's funny is that I sold 24 300 PS25
Woo!
Safety Max.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
That's a hot one.
300 PS25. And if you sell light bulbs every day and you just heard that and you have no idea what Greg and I are talking about, you don't know shit about lighting, son. That's why you got to take LS1. Don't be afraid to learn about what the 300 watt PS25 was, because that was a workhorse light bulb for a long time. And there really isn't an LED that can replace that, Greg.
If not, you have to jam multiple in or get a whole new fixture. And a lot of times people that have those don't want to have a whole new fixture. They want their 300 PS bulb. Get it for them.
Yeah.
Get a grip.
Yeah, come on, man. So Safety Max on top of it. Who knows where that thing is going, eh? When that order came, when I saw that order, I see all the orders in my inbox. Right? I saw that one. I thought, man, still rolling.
That's a fun one.
PS25s, bro. That's an old school. That's an order from the 80s right there. Of course, we're following up with a quick sales call to see if we can do anything for them in terms of their energy efficiency, folks. But of course, we're very grateful to you, the listener, out there right now, mowing your lawn, driving your car, saying, when the hell is Colgan going to shut up? And that is right now.
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for all. You are lost, Lord is there to find you.